The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of So What Do You Really Do, the podcast where I, your host, talk to artists and entertainers about their day jobs, and the artist and entertainer that is on the podcast is me. It's another tour blog update. It'll be the second of three of so far of... it doesn't matter. I'm not going to be able to keep track of numerically at these things. I'm just going to do them. And this one is just a talking head. It's a one take. It's straight to the camera. I don't feel like walking around doing transitions like I did in the other videos. I don't feel like trying to make everything look interesting, because I think what I'm going to talk about is interesting. I hope. At least it might be. Of course, by the way, when I start recording is exactly when my mother's dog starts barking. The little thing's been quiet this whole time while prepping for this, and as soon as I start talking, bark, bark, bark. And of course, we know it's my mother's dog, not my dog, who is named Sister, because she is a perfect little angel and a perfect podcast dog that doesn't make noise. Yes, I'm still staying at my mother's house for the month of December. We're coming towards the end of it, and I'm going to be getting on the road soon. And that's when, hopefully, the most interesting things will be happening. And by most interesting, I mean the things that are causing me the most anxiety. All right. After the last update, I did want to specifically say that I don't want to be on this thing complaining all the time. That's not what was my intention. I did a lot of complaining about open mics. And I don't want to do that. I don't want this to be like negative. I don't want to be complaining about things that are happening on the tour. So luckily I can say my show at the Autobar went great. It was absolutely fantastic. Audience was awesome. All the comedians were hilarious. Everyone had a good time. I quite enjoyed myself. I had a good tiny little quick set that made me feel good. And I walked away with it with a pretty good recording, I think. Probably not submission tape worthy, but it was good fun time to be had by all. I love the Auto Bar. I mentioned I am from Boston. I live in Boston. I just want to be clear about that. I am originally from Dundalk. I live in Boston now, but I do make people intro me as Boston because that's the lesser of the two between Boston and Dundalk. I really enjoyed the show, and I'm really happy that it went well, because I was really kind of upset about the show going into it a little bit, because I don't know if I mentioned this, but I reached out to the show producer, who's a friend, who's always put me up whenever I'm coming to town, whenever I've asked for it. He's never not done me well. He's a great guy, a funny comedian, and I've reached out to him like September, October. He's like, hey, I'm coming into town in December. Can I do your show? Headline it. And he goes, no, I already have a headliner, but I'll let you feature. You'll do 15 minutes. I was like, cool, perfect. You know, it's hard getting longer spots in the world of comedy sometimes. For at least at me it is right now. There's too much of this in comedy. Here we go. Here comes back to the claim. Too much of this comedy where we're putting too many comedians on a show and shortening their time. Yeah, the amount of show flyers I see, it's like 9 comedians all doing 4 minutes. It's like, why is this a show? Who wants to pay for this? I've always been a fan of less comedians, more time. And the always good thing is if you book your lineup short, you can always add more people if need be, like last minute somebody coming into town or something like that, you know? So I was happy to be able to do that, stretch my legs a little bit, which is 15 minutes is not that much time when you really get going. I mean, I can do an hour, but it's nice to be able to, I like the comfort of time. I don't feel like I have to rush my jokes. Whenever I do a 5 minute set, it's like, bam, 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 bam. I don't have time to delineate. I don't have time to mess with the crowd or talk to somebody or chase tangents. I have to do bam, 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 which is fine. But when you're doing that all the time, it's grueling. And I kind of developed a 5 minutes that is, this is a good, quick set of 5 minutes. It's the hits. And I don't have to worry about anybody being disappointed in those 5 minutes. There's no laws. It's bam, 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 bam. So it's kind of the same set. But I had fun. Everyone laughed. It doesn't matter. I enjoyed it. The following Saturday, however, womp, womp. Again, I'm not going to, you know, it's, I thank the guys who put me on. They even, you know, offered. I didn't have to ask. They're like, oh yeah, we have this thing. Do you want to do it? I was like, oh yeah, please. And it's in the same place that one of the open mics was, which is never a good sign, but it was, you know, Saturday Night Show. They do it regularly. They've been doing it for a couple of years. In fact, I think this show came about, and then they started doing the open mic because, you know, maybe the show was successful at one time. I don't know. It's the Saturday after Christmas, you know, like, or the Saturday going into Christmas as it was. So, you know, it's not that busy of a weekend, which tells you how the show went. It was right back to the same thing. The thing with the auto bar is there was what? Mike, me, Ryan, Chris, whatever her name is, headliner. Yeah. So seven comedians on it, and three of them were women. The headliner was a woman. Woo woo. She's hilarious. She was hysterical. The comedian opened for her. I apologize. I forget her name, but we were doing a fundraiser for her. So this show was raising money for her because her apartment burned down. So we were raising money for a good cause on top of it. It was great. I loved it. It was everything the comedy should be. Everyone was there on purpose. They had fun. They enjoyed themselves. They laughed. It was great. And I loved it. And then comes Saturday, the following Saturday, show of all dudes. And, oh, well, it's fine. I'm sick of this. Oh, your lineup needs women. How come there's no women on your lineup? Oh, I'm just booking who's funny. But are you? First off, there are funny women. You could book them. And let's be honest, you're not booking. I'm willing to admit that sometimes certain lineups happen to be all men just because coincidentally that's who was available. I will say this as someone who's done his own shows. Sometimes it's difficult getting women to agree to be on shows or at least just respond to booking inquiries. That's been my biggest problem is I've reached out to women on shows and just don't respond. Now, does that say something about me? Am I a person that they don't want to respond to quickly? Am I somebody that makes them uncomfortable? Am I putting on a show that makes them not want to be on it? I don't like to think that I am. I think I'm a nice person. I run good shows, you know, but I've in myself, someone who's trying to put together shows of people of diverse comedy backgrounds have found it difficult sometimes to put women, living in the Boston area. Even though there's plenty of them, plenty of female comedians and plenty of comedians of color, it does seem to be difficult. I have noticed that women tend to be very bad at responding. Is that anecdotal? Is there something else going into it? I don't know. But it's clearly obvious when other people are just booking male lineups because they're booking male lineups. Maybe they're not excluding women, but they're not searching them out. They're not providing them a space or an opportunity. That's going on in the Boston scene right now. Somebody just took over one of the hair. Why am I being vague? Nick's Comedy Stop. It was ran by an entity known as John Tobin Presents or Tobin Presents, whatever. And he has turned the booking reins over to this local guy. He puts out big, huge thing of here's all our headliners coming up in January. And it's 10 dudes and one woman. And Carolyn Plummer, who's the one woman, is hilarious. She's very funny. She deserves to be on any line. But you look at it, it's also, you know, the exception of one guy, it's all old white men. It's the old Boston stereotypical, you know, old school comedians that don't perform at Knicks. None of these guys have been headlining Knicks for years. Why? Because they do Giggles Comedy Club up on Route 1, up on the North Shore. You know, which is the suburbs outside of Boston. And it's the stereotypical, you know, complaining about my wife and kids these days and doing ethnic impressions that we agreed a long time ago, or I guess we agreed, but most of us had come to the realization a long time ago are not funny anymore and that we don't like them and they're annoying and they're bad. And the reason why those people haven't been headlining Knicks is because their audience doesn't go to the city. Yes, there's people who like them. There's people who find those people funny, and that's it's subjective. Like what you want to like. Even if what you like oppresses and makes fun of and punches down on other people. Anyway, I don't want to use punching down. Ugh. Anyway, I hate that term, but I get it. Whatever. So the comment back of course, if I'm just booking who's funny. But are you, like, when you look at the lineup of the people who are coming on the shows that support the shows as a other comedians who are a part of the show, they are definitely not the funniest people. Yeah, and he picked a couple of women to do feature and opening act stuff. But like 5 out of 30, whatever it is. Something ridiculous. But there you go. Anyway, so, which by the way makes me feel bad because I'm telling you now about a show that I was on that was all male lineup. You know? Should I protest? Should I say, oh, I'm not going to be a part of that show because you didn't book any women? Or, hey, I'm going to give up my spot so you can fill it with a funny woman. No, I'm not going to do that. Nobody does that. I'm not going to give up my stage time. Maybe I'm doing something good by using my voice here on the podcast to highlight that and point out that maybe I'm being a hypocrite.
Awesome. Make some noise. You've been here before. There we go. Awesome. I love this place. I've been here 100 times. I've never come up these stairs. I don't have a coming upstairs kind of body. It is so nice up here. I love this. This is gorgeous. I love this wood paneling. I love the signs. I love... All right, here's the thing. Let's be honest. I'm always concerned with what's behind me when I do comedy. I do comedy around the country. I'm right now in the middle of a 3-month tour. And I've done comedy in places like VFW halls or Knights of Columbus. Places where they just turn the light on in the middle of my set. I've done comedy places and for whatever reason, some places just have a giant American flag against the backdrop of the stage. And I'm always worried about doing comedy in front of an American flag. Because if you see me standing in front of an American flag, shouting into a microphone with this haircut, I look like Breitbart stock photos. I look like a background actor from American History X. I look like some of you are hoping I fucked around and gonna find out about January 6th. I look like if I told the host to get home safely, he would think it was a sarcastic threat.
There was like 11 people at the show. I'm not even sure they wanted to be there. It's a typical surprise comedy show. I mean, at least they secluded in the other room of the establishment where it could be to itself. You know, I tried to promote. I asked them multiple times for a flyer. I asked them multiple times, do you need promotion material? Is there a link for tickets or RSVP? They finally get to it Friday, something, the day before the show. It's like, pretty sure they do the show weekly. So, you know, you should have your thing together. They do it every couple of weeks at least. It's disappointing. And of course, going first, you now have to set the pace. And of course, the people I'm doing comedy with why do you do the same material at an open mic that you're doing at a paid show? All right. Well, it's not a paid show. No one's getting paid. It's a free comedy show on a Saturday night. All right. Let's talk about that. In Boston, there's a reason why they are adamant about no open mics and no free shows on Fridays and Saturdays. Because in their mind, it devalues the comedy. If you, Friday and Saturday nights are show nights. They're the professional nights. There's the nights that people go out and they get all dressed up and they spend a lot of money parking and babysitters and they go out there and they try to find, a good time for the night. And you don't want to waste their time by giving them an open mic. An open mic is just anybody can, that's the truest definition of open mic, is anybody can sign up and perform. That's what an open mic is. Anyone can come here and perform. Well, when you leave the door open to that, you're not going to get the best of quality people. Because the best of quality people should be on a Friday, Saturday night being paid to perform professionally for an audience. And if you cannot get booked on a Friday and Saturday night, then maybe you're not the professional. So you're trying things out. You're working on your craft. You're of not great quality, probably. Now, granted, I'm saying this about me, somebody who was at open mics on Fridays and Saturdays and outside of Boston. So Boston, they get adamant about that. You're making comedy look bad by having an open mic. And that's basically what this is. Let's be honest. This is an open mic on a Saturday night. You know, so why are, now you could be saying that these guys are, hey, you know what? It's not an A type crowd, so they're not going to A type material. So I'm going to work on stuff. And they're working the same thing I saw them do 3 days earlier at the open mic. Or maybe because they're not good enough, they don't have any other material. You know? It was just another slew of just dudes antagonizing the audience over and over and over again. And of course, none of them are paying attention to what the other comedians did. So they keep going back to the same people, asking the same questions, doing the same jokes. And it's like, get in there and do something. Like, I then, you know, I had to open the show. The host goes out, does like 3 minutes of not good material. And then I got to pick the room up. So therefore, for me, I got 11 people in a room on a Saturday that's really not wanting to be there. I'm trying my absolute hardest to give them a good show because I also am a comedian who is professional. And I want to do a good show. And I want these people to walk away feeling good about what they saw. And it's a harder battle for me now because I'm not being set up to be able to perform properly. They're not generally warmed up. I shouldn't be having to warm them up. One would hope that the crowd comes hot and ready for comedy. That is not what happened. But, and you can just watch the show. I sat there and watched the entire show. I watched every comedian. And it's you can watch, just watch. The life just drained out of these people's eyes. Everyone was nice. They chuckled. They laughed. They played along. Nobody got mad. Nobody said, leave me alone. Nobody didn't respond when a comedian talked to them. Of course, they talked to the comedians without, or, you know, the comedians talked to the people without essentially consent. You know, they just verbally attacked people. In the middle of those two shows, though, I did go to Ocean City with my family, which is like, yay, go to the beach in December. Sounds like fun, doesn't it? And it was. It was fun. I got to spend 3 days out there with my mother and my sister and my little niece, who's 11 now. There's a Christmas village out there near Ocean City that my mother likes to go to every year because my mother loves Christmas. I hate it, but I said I'll go along. And, you know, we brought the dogs and, you know, we did that. And we went to like a arcade bar place and, you know, did some other family things. They went shopping at the tax-free outlets. Because that's what my mother loves to do. I hate to be stereotypical about heteronormative about my mom, but that bitch does love to shop. Because bitches be shopping, right? I know, I did all this promoting women in comedy and then call my mom a bitch who likes to shop. But she does. I mean, it's fine. She loves, her mother loved it. You know, that's fine. That's what they want to do. We had a good time. My dog, who is named Sister, who is, by the way, the perfect, I already said it, the perfect podcast dog, because she was literally sitting outside the door just waiting for me. You know, my mother's dog. Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. Yes, I'm talking about you right now, Sky. I let them in the room so they would be quiet. I mean, Sister's still being quiet, but anyway. I did not do any comedy out in Ocean City because I don't think there is any comedy happening out there. It's a beach town. It's winter. Maybe there's some comedy shows happening there in the summertime, but I can't imagine there's open mics. There is a club in Delaware, which is, you know, a couple minute drive from Ocean City, depending on what part of Delaware we're talking about, like 30 minutes, 45 minutes, this club is. And I performed there last year, and it's a great club, and they have an open mic on Mondays, and I was going to do it, and I just was burned out from the drive and dealing with my mother and my sister and just being all that, and I just didn't go. So I didn't do any comedy for those 3 days. But it made me think a lot about these. I mean, I hadn't been to Ocean City in 30 years. Last time I went, I was 13 years old, and I went for a day with my friend and his mom. And he called me up and said, hey, my mom said I could bring a friend to Ocean City. You want to go? I was like, yeah, sure. And I haven't been since, because I don't care much for the beach. I don't. Hayden Christensen said it best in the Star Wars movies. Like, sand is rough and coarse, and it gets everywhere, and it's uncomfortable. Yeah, that's how I feel about the beach. I've been to beaches since then, but opinion hasn't changed, but I just haven't been to Ocean City. But I went. And by the way, you can hear my Balmer accent coming back in when I'm like, Ocean City, going down the ocean. One. All right. We'll try and fight that. But made me think about these resort towns like that and how there's nothing going on in the off seasons in those places. You know, a lot of them are very typically have, you know, immigrants during the hot seasons. They come here to the country and they work at some resort, restaurant, club place, and they make a bunch of money and they get to see American culture and get some kind of education, whatever, and they go back to their wherever, Russia, Ireland, wherever. But they're not there in the off season. So who is there in the off season? What are these people doing in the off season? Are they so burned out during the summertime that in the wintertime they don't want any entertainment? No, I'm sure they want still. I don't know. I didn't really even bother to look at anything. So maybe there is a comedy of seeing out in Ocean City that I don't know about, but I live 3 hours away from it. You would figure you'd hear about it in Baltimore. You know, people would be cross-pollinating back and forth, but there wasn't. So then the following weekend, I did exactly what I was complaining about, an open mic on a Friday night in, you know, my neighborhood of Fells Point. This kid runs it in the backdrop of a barbershop. And you know what? Bless this kid's heart. He puts up lights. He puts up a good sound system. He tries to get people in. That's the thing about Baltimore. We do this thing, and I'm sure other small communities do this similar thing in their comedy sets because they don't know the difference. Is they try to get people to come to open mics. Bless your heart. You want people to come see your comedy. Yeah, but open mics aren't the best avenue for comedy. You can't call an open mic a comedy show. You have to call it an open mic. You know, so he's out there promoting on the street, you know, parking. Hey, comedy show, free comedy show, free comedy show. It's an open mic. And some people came in, they sat in there, did not have a good time. And that's disappointing. First off, the front row, those two guys were having fun because they were whacked out of their gourd on edibles and Jim Beam. And I mean that literally whacked out, because after about three comedians, one of them passed out and laid there, and his friend comes up and was like, hey, between comedians, can you help me get my friend out of here? I don't want to make a scene. And of course, what happens is he makes a complete and total scene as the host is introducing the next comedian. He's trying to pick this droop rubber-legged person up and drag him out of the tight little barbershop back room, which props to you finding alternative spaces to do comedy. Yeah, it's BYOB because they don't have a liquor license, and you just don't tell anybody you can bring your own booze in here. And, you know, people enjoy that kind of speakeasy vibe. But everyone's jumping to watch this passed out guy get dragged out, which, by the way, and then everyone in the crowd is like, ah, leave him, because this is more entertaining than the comedians that we're watching. So he just leaves him. He just lays him down on the couch. So now the rest of the night, there's just a passed out dude who all of us are wondering, is he still breathing? Just sitting in the front row. And I'm getting ready to go up. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a good crowd. I'm going to film this. I'm going to get my nice little tape out of it. And it is not good.
I suffer from sleep apnea. If you don't know what sleep apnea is, that is when your body seeks revenge on you for eating a cheeseburger by slowly strangling you in your sleep. A typical case of sleep apnea is defined by when my doctor gave me the results. He said, typical case of sleep apnea is when your body tries to wake itself up more than three times in a night because it has difficulty breathing. My sleep study showed, on average, I woke up 65 times an hour. Yeah, you know that's mathematically impossible, right? Like, if you're awake 65 times in one 60-minute period, it's not sleeping, it's Netflix with your eyes closed.
First off, as they're introducing me, half the audience of like eight people get up and just walk out because they haven't been laughing through four comedians. They've sat here for an hour waiting to see the show, and the show is just disappointing and unfunny because you're letting anyone go out and do whatever they want. And nobody did anything outlandish or crazy. They just did all dude ramblings again. Led up of all dudes just doing ramblings and complaints. Not doing jokes. Blaming the audience for not getting, understanding what they're trying to say, or understanding their reference. And so half the audience just gets up and walks out. So my set was less than spectacular, which is fine because, you know what? I was working on stuff anyway. Working on new jokes. But when there's a crowd activity, I can riff and come up with more stuff. When I'm feeding off the crowd, I can make new jokes, hopefully. You know, that's the intent. You know, it's the fight or flight. You know, my back's against the wall. There are probably people looking at me. I got to make a joke. And here's what comes out. And it tends to be good. You know, sometimes the joke is the punchline's good for the moment, but I know it's never going to work again. But it gets me on the road to writing, because then I hone and then rewrite, and I work on these materials, and re-going through the material then helps me create more. That's my writing process. I'm not saying it's the best. I'm not saying it's the right way. It's how I work. You know, I riff, I hone, I rewrite, I riff, I hone, and I rewrite, and keep going. Until I feel like I've gotten the best that I can get out of it. And sometimes it takes a long time to write that way. Sometimes it's just, very rarely, it's just perfect off the bat. The first time out of the gate, it was the right thing. That's only happened once, twice maybe in my writing. But the good news, though, is one of my big anxieties has been not just if something tragic happens during this trip, but also not being able to fill the schedule. You know, I've got a bunch of, I got a good fair amount of bookings already. I still have people to contact who I know are going to say yes. But I don't have all the shows filled. And I'm going on the road in a couple of days. So you have to send messages out. And you have to ask. You know, and it's maybe it's easy for some people, but it's become not easy for me recently to ask for things. You know, there's some people who are just scrupulous. They'll ask for whatever they want. You know, I'm not saying they're rude, but they have no problems asking a big nationally touring headliner, hey, can I do a spot on your show at the Wilbur Theater? And here's the thing. Those guys get those shows. Not all the time, but it happens. There's guys who have performed at large clubs and theaters as, you know, a spot on a guest spot on a show because they asked the person. Are they friends with them? Do they know? Did they just meet them on the street and say, hey, can I do a spot on your thing? And bless their hearts, it worked for them. It's a very uncomfortable position for me to be in. A friend of mine recently just did the same thing. He had to go hat in hand asking a big time comedian for a spot on his big touring show. And he talked about it on his podcast. He talked about it on his radio show. And it became a thing where it's like, I have to, you know, I need, this will only benefit me. It'll only put me in a good place. I know the guy, sort of. I know some of the people on it. I've got the vouching. I just have to do it. This is what he did. Well, I asked that guy for the same thing. He's a friend. And here's the thing. When you send out avails to people, you know, you should feel good about it, but you don't really know. I don't know that answer is going to be definite because I've asked plenty of times and the answer has been no. And I'm willing to take a no. I'm fine with no. I hate not hearing back. Tell me no, that's fine. I'm not going to hold it against you. But don't just leave me in the lurch. I hate that. Even when I'm sending out booking requests to regular shows to people I don't know, that seems easier sometimes. Like, so here's a link. Here's my tape. Here's my credits. I'm going to be in town on this day. Can I do your show? Sorry, it's full. Sorry, you're not right for my audience. I've heard that back. One of the shows that was supposed to be part of the story I was hoping to get on was exactly that. The booker got back to me and said, hey, you're funny, but you're not right for my audience. As he said, I think he said they were ratchet. It's an urban room, as the people like to say. All right, that's fine. I mean, you don't think I'm right for him, that's fine, but I can do it. I got the stuff. That's fine. Don't worry, though. I appreciate you just replying to me. So I have to ask this friend for this favor. Big favor. And I'm already sent out booking requests to other cities, and I'm not getting things back. It's disheartening not hearing back. If I get a bunch of no's, I don't know if that's disheartening or not, because I haven't gotten a bunch of no's. I either get a bunch of yeses, some yeses, and just mostly no replies. So the no reply thing is disheartening because you don't know why they're saying no. Is it because they don't find you funny? Because they don't like you? Is it because they're booked and they don't want to make space on the show? Are they uncomfortable saying no? So it's easier for them to ignore it. If I ignore him, then I didn't tell him no and I don't have to feel bad. You know? So I send this text and I'm waiting. And I'm waiting. And there's a point where it's like, do I follow up? Same thing with booking guests for this podcast. You send a thing out. Yeah, I'd love to do it. All right. And then you wait to hear back about booking. You're like, hey, FYI, just a reminder. Oh, yeah. Sorry, my bad. is that scenario. Am I bothering you by going, hey, FYI, I just wanted to hear back about the show. I know this is a big deal. It's if you say, like, if I tell you, if you say no, it's not a big deal, no worries. Does that make you feel better about replying no to me? Or does that just make it even more awkward? Like, oh no, he's being really nice now. If he was being a dick, maybe it was easier to say no. So I'm waiting. Christmas goes by. A couple days go by. Boop, 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 whatever sound my phone makes. Go back in the podcast and listen to what sound my phone made. That's the sound I want placed right here. I get a text message. Yeah, dude, no problem. You're doing five up top. Oh, thank God. Yes is the answer I wanted, but I was willing to accept the no. I just wanted an answer. And I had to be worried, you know, is this going to strain my relationship with this friend? Because we're, you know, acquaintances mostly. You know, we have a lot of things in common. And I don't know why I'm being vague. It's Justin Slagle, who was former guest on the show and a comedian and a friend. And I mean, Justin and I know each other. We talk, we text, we're friendly. We have been for many years, cordial and talk, but we're not super great friends. We're not going to give each other Christmas gifts or invite each other over for family holidays or cookouts. I'm not going to get invited to his kid's christening if he has a kid and it gets christened. But we're incredibly friendly when we see each other and we have things to talk about. You know, we have a lot in common, especially former guests of the podcast. But also, you know, we do comedy. We both worked in radio. We worked with among some of the same people for years. We have mutual friends. I don't know why I was being vague about that. Maybe because I didn't want to say his name. Maybe because, I mean, the thing is, it's a New Year's Eve show. He is a part of Die Laughing Productions, which is a X-rated murder mystery shows here in the Maryland area. You know, they branch out to DC, Virginia, West Virginia, and stuff. And they... The guys who created the thing originally, Joe Robinson, Rob Mayer, former guest of the podcast as well. He released a comedy album during COVID. He was part of that conversation during the COVID years. Rob and I are friends. Rob's the reason why I'm doing comedy. I've told him that, you know, hanging out at Burke's, above Burke's restaurant at the Baltimore Comedy Factory, late at night eating turkey clubs together and talking about comedy. And that is what pushed me into actually fulfilling my desire to be a comedian. And him and Joe Robinson, who, when I was a young radio professional before leaving town, I recorded his album for him. Like, these guys know me. I talk to him all the time. Rob has put me on other shows that he has ran back in the day when he ran shows, back before he was David Koechner's opener. He doesn't have time to run shows. He's too busy touring the country with David Koechner, which is great. And I'm happy for him. In fact, I even asked Rob when he was in Boston with Koechner, hey, not a big deal. Can I host for you and David? I know you guys do a two-man show. So if you don't want to add a host to it, that's fine. And he goes, yeah, we do a two-man show. No host. That's how Koechner likes it. No offense. He gets back to me. He replied. It's not that big of a deal. And it was the club I was already friends with, so it wouldn't have been a problem. He even asked, like, hey, do you want to come to the hangout the show? I was like, I know the club. I get in for free. I'll come hang out. And I did. You know, after Rob did a set, went back in the green room. Hang out with Rob, just talking, catching up. And he's like, hey, do you want to hang out and meet Koechner after the show? I'm like, nah, I'm here to talk to my friend. I'm not using you to get to Koechner. Just wanted to talk to my friend. And we had a great conversation and hang while Koechner did his show. And then, of course, Rob and Koechner do a little duo Q&A, two-man bit at the end of the show to wrap it up. And it's fun. It's great. It's a good time. I'm happy for him. But, you know, that's the thing. Rob was like, immediately got back. He's like, hey, sorry, but no, which is fine by me. So I had to send this other one and I'm waiting. Justin, you know, my phone, there was dog hair on the keyboard and I had to blow into the microphone. Okay, sorry. My dog, who is named Sister, sheds everywhere. Still, it's okay, baby. I love you. Everywhere I go, I take a piece of her with me because it's usually stuck to my shirt. Anyway, so I get this text from Justin. Yeah, dude, no problem. Five up top. I'm like, oh, thank God. Yes is great. And I come to find out I was hanging out with that very day, that night. I went and hung out with some of the other guys from this X-Rated Murder Mystery Company, who are also comedians that know me and, you know, friendly with. And, you know, we all started around the same time together here. And, you know, we all took our different paths. I went to Boston. They're still here. They're killing it. They're doing great. Happy for all of them. One of them is doing great in the VR world. Tommy Simbaz is doing great in the VR world. And I'm the one who introduced him to the VR comedy I'm the one who introduced him to the VR space that he's doing comedy at. I was like, oh, hey, you have this VR headset. Here's a place doing VR comedy. Link. Which is also something I would love to be doing, but I'm not buying a $300 VR headset just to do comedy. I can't. At the time when this was big during the pandemic, I couldn't afford it, and I could afford it now, and I'm not going to spend that money. It just is not a logical purchase for me. Maybe if it goes on sale, or maybe if it's cheaper, maybe, but anyway. I go to see and hang out with a couple of them that night, and they're like, oh, hey, did you get Justin's text? I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, man, he talked to us, and we all said, go ahead. We had, you know, rehearsal, and he brought it up. It was like, because they're doing a stand-up show and then the murder mystery show. So they're all going to be there at night. They're all performing on the comedy show beforehand, and then they're all doing the murder mystery show afterward, the interactive murder mystery show. And I was already feeling good by getting a yes, and it made me feel even better that I know that my contemporaries also willingly said yes. You know, maybe they're just being nice. Maybe they're like, oh, no, yeah. Dennis is good. He's solid. We don't have to worry about him. Give him the spot. You know, maybe they guilt him. It's like, hey, Dennis is so supportive. We got to do something for him. Let's just do this for him. There's that broken brain going always to the negative. But I already felt good by getting a yes. I was expecting, you know, hoping like maybe this is that day where all that good news comes in. And I mean, I got better news by, you know, contemporaries going, yeah, of course, dude, no worries. We're glad to be hanging out with you. Now I'm putting words in their mouths. But essentially the mood felt like, of course, it's going to be great to hang out with you on that day. So I have a New Year's Eve show, which by the time this comes out, it had already done and passed. And so the next update, well, you know, the New Year's Eve show. I mean, it can only be a win for me. I'm not a comedian that is bombs often. My jokes are good. I know this. Maybe I'm being arrogant by saying this. Maybe other people disagree, but I don't care. I can go on a show and I can get laughs. Done it time and time again. I send my tapes out for and booking requests, and I get bookings. It seemed to be easier pre-pandemic than it has been since going back on the road post-pandemic. Maybe there's something else. I don't feel like I'm sending out the most of confident tapes. I mean, the tapes are good. Are they the greatest? No, I'm going to admit my tapes are not the greatest because I don't have the greatest opportunities for success. But you watch the tape within the first minute. You're like, all right, here's a funny guy. If you watch the full 5 minute, 7 minute tapes, whatever the time lengths are that I send out, you will say, all right, this is an adequate comedian. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with being adequate. I am never going to be the best comedian on the show. And that's fine. At my level, and the comedy that I want to do, I'm okay with never being the best guy in the room. If I'm the worst guy on the show, it's a damn good show. I'm not going to ruin a show. I think people know that, who know me. I'm not going to make the show worse. I'm not a wild card. I'm not somebody that is going to make the audience upset. You know, I've done comedy enough to know. Yeah, sometimes I mess up. Sometimes I say a joke that's inappropriate. Sometimes I don't read the room well. Most of the time I read the room great. I do a great job. My jokes are funny. If I stick to them, kind of, it's going to be a short little quick set on New Year's Eve up top of the show, which is fine. You know, the comedian who's hosting, Eric Woodworth, is a hilarious comedian. And he's going to do a great job of making everybody in the room feel good and comfortable. He's going to introduce me. I'm going to do a tight banger of a 5 minute set. That's going to make everyone laugh. We're going to have a good time. And I don't, it's, it, it's New Year's Eve. People are coming out on purpose. It's going to be a sold out show. There's no way that I can mess this show up. I mean, there is. I could possibly go out there and just screw up. The big worry, the only thing that's is I go out there and I try to make a riff off the top about something and it doesn't land and it sets an unfair pace for the rest of the set. It's very possible. Unlikely. But that is the only thing I could really do to mess this up. If I go out there, tell my jokes, it'll be a hit. Everybody's there on purpose. They're excited. They've probably been drinking. It's New Year's Eve. They want to have a good time. I'm going to be a part of giving these people a good time, and that makes me feel great. I've also gotten a bunch of other replies on bookings in LA and other cities on the way out there. So some of the anxieties have lessened, you know, because like I said, this is supposed to be fun. I'm going to go out there and have fun. Also, I just found out just before recording this episode that a friend of mine is going to be in LA the same one of the weekends I'm there. So I get to hang out with a friend in LA who's also not from LA. So my friend Ashley and I are going to be hanging out. I messaged her. I was like, hey, we're going to be there at the same time. Let's do it. I mean, she's doing a 3-night headlining thing at the Comedy Store. I'm doing bar shows, but there's... Happy for her and her success. She's a great comedian. And then I get to hang out with people. So it's like all of this, once I get out of Baltimore and get on the road and doing these things and meeting new people and going out of these things, I think there's going to be a lot less upset complaining about the way the comedy is. And I'll give you a true idea of what the road is like. A friend of mine, the reason I'm doing this, a friend of mine who does road gigs says that he hates doing the road because it's lonely. You're by yourself. You don't have relationships with anybody. You're just meeting a random new person every couple of hours. You check into the hotel and you go to a room alone and you sit there and you watch TV and eat bad food. And then you go to your show and you walk in and you say hi to the staff and you go in the green room and you're all by yourself in the green room. Or there's other comedians in the green room who are on the show and you don't know them. It's lonely. I went, that doesn't sound lonely. That sounds like fun. That sounds like opportunities to meet people. Also, it sounds like an opportunity for me to use the same jokes over and over again with meeting new people because I see the hotel clerk. I see the gas attendant. I can talk to them. I can be, you know, myself. I can say things to them that, you know, over and over again. You know, I get to also introduce myself to people. And I get to learn about other people and meet new people. It, to me, sounds like a dream to me. We'll find out. You know, this will be the longest time, you know, I've spent on, we're doing 3 weeks to LA. A long time in a car. I did 1 week up and down the East Coast with my dog in the car, and I had hotel stays and family to stay with. There's going to be less of that. I mean, I'm going to spend a whole month in LA. That's a month away. Like, the last winter was the longest time I spent away from my house, and I spent 3 months of it, 2.5 months of it here in Baltimore with my family. So I was established in a place, in a city I already knew, by the way. City like that I know like the back of my hand. Now I'm going to be in a new city, one that I've been to once before, but I'm going to be there for a month. 5 weeks almost, January 26th to March 2nd. I will be in LA, living the LA life. You know, I can't wait to go do yoga with my friend in the park, who's a yoga instructor. I'm going to walk up to the Holly Hills sign with sister. I'm probably going to go to the beach. Because it's an experience, even though I just talked about how much I hate the beach. I mean, the Pacific Ocean feels exactly like the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. It's water's water. Anyway, got to get back to making things feel like it's going to be a positive trip and looking to the bright side of things. So, again, opening up with happiness, spent the middle complaining, and now closing with positive outlook. And I'm hoping to be continuing to bring you more positive outlook and more good stories throughout these little updates. We'll be back with some other guests. Right now, I'm just waiting for people to schedule their interview. Yes, I want to do it. All right, here's the link to schedule time. Pick out a time. Because once I get on the road, it's going to be harder to find Wi-Fi and connections and be able to do these things. So we'll see how it goes. Once I get into LA, I'll be established in a place I can reset up my mobile setup. Maybe we'll do a little bit of talk about this mobile setup because I like it. It looks good. I'm impressed with what I was able to do on my own self, with my own technology. Anyway, Thank you again so much for listening to the episode. If you have any questions about what's it going to be like to be on the road, if you're curious about something that I'm going to do, if you want me to talk about a certain subject or see a certain place while I'm out there, any recommendations of places to go, tourist things to do, places to eat in certain cities and stuff, leave them in the comments. Send them to me on social media. I'm at Dead Air Dennis on basically every social media platform. So let me know what you want to see from somebody who's doing a, you know, 2.5 month road trip to do comedy. Maybe we'll do a Q&A instead of me just talking extemporaneously. That is not how that word is supposed to be pronounced. And as long as I'm that, I send me your questions. Ask what it is. I'll answer the questions. I have thought about getting somebody in here to come in on the podcast and interview me about the road, so I'm not doing this one-man talking head thing with barking dogs in the background, but this is something I have to get used to doing. I used to ask people this. I stopped asking it because it's not really a question that people responded well to. I mean, they didn't bat. They just didn't have an answer. And the question was, what is the one question you've always dreamed someone would ask you in an interview and has never asked you? Joel Kim Booster did a great job. It's like, you did exactly that. You asked me about my workout routine. I love working out and nobody ever asked me about it and you did. But I'm sure other guests have asked good questions. But I mean, growing up, I still do it as an adult. I have daydreams about being interviewed on The Tonight Show or Jimmy Fallon or Conan. You know, I'm sitting on that couch and getting questions and I'm responding. And, you know, I've had that daydream fantasy my whole life. And sometimes I daydream about the things I'm going to say on this. And that's how I get to the point where I'm talking about the things I'm going to talk about. So maybe I need to do more of recording in the moment about what I'm going to say and less stream of consciousness and more about maybe go back to writing. I've always had these fantasies about being interviewed and how I'm going to give the story of my life or the story of some incident. I'm going to ask people about that. I know maybe people don't do that. Maybe I'm the only one who does that. I don't know. But you know what? In the comments or on social media, message me. If you have a fantasy question that you would love to be asked in an interview, send it to me. Maybe I'll ask that question to other people, see what they have to say about it. Anyway, that's enough for this tour blog. Let's hope you have good shows and a good time and that I get over the anxieties and no catastrophes happen while I'm on the road. Take care, guys.
Ah!